The strong men keep coming on. They go down, shot, hanged, sick, broken. They live on fighting, singing, lucky as plungers. The strong mothers pulling them.
You are listening to the voice of Carl Sandburg reading his poem Upstream, a page from this afternoon's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Every Sunday at 3, WNBC, in conjunction with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan, brings you Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests today, by transcription, Ogden Nash and Carl Sandburg. Around this lovely valley rise the purple hills of paradise. Oh, softly on yon banks of haze her rosy face the summer lays. Becalmed along the azure sky the argosies of cloudland lie, whose shores with many a shining rift far off their pearl-white peaks uplift. Through all the long midsummer day the meadow sides are sweet with hay. I seek the coolest sheltered seat just where the field and forest meet, where grow the pine trees tall and bland, the ancient oaks austere and grand, and fringy roots and pebbles fret the ripples of the rivulet. A few midsummer lines from the poem of the same name by Richard Watson Gilder to help us usher in the month of August. Now that we've completed our Shakespearean cycle for this year, we have a little accumulated business to attend to. The question of our theme, for example. We've received a number of inquiries concerning its source. The title is Hard Work and Horseplay, and the music can be found in Richard Rogers' thrilling score for Victory at Sea. In answer to Robert J. Raines' request for the Canada Lee version of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, the LP disc is unfortunately out of print, but John Plummer of our NBC record library has sent out his best brace of record hounds, and we hope they'll track down a copy for the program in the very near future. A personal note to our writer-director, Draper Lewis, signed, Your long-lost cousin, Dorothy Thomas. Miss Thomas, a distinguished lady of letters, was recently heard on This I Believe, and Draper hopes to lure her here to Studio 9C some Sunday afternoon to discuss poetry with us. Better start preparing a few notes, Miss Thomas. And speaking of poetry, let's meet the first of our guests this afternoon, Mr. Ogden Nash. A weighty tome entitled 20th Century Authors informs us that Ogden Nash was born in Rye, New York, August 19, 1902. He was educated at St. George's School, and in 1920 and 21 he was a student at Harvard. In 1931, Nash published two books of verse, Hard Lines and Freewheeling, which won amused attention by their remarkable freedom of scansion and unconventionality of thought. P.M. Jack stated that Nash was secure in his possession of all the best and worst rhymes outside of the rhyming dictionaries. And Lyle Bell added, we'd rather watch Nash on his piebald Pegasus than Lady Godiva on a white horse. Suppose we join Mr. Nash aboard Pegasus now, or rather on his Cadman record titled Ogden Nash Reads Ogden Nash. For example, here's A Beginner's Guide to the Ocean.
Let us now consider the ocean. It is always in motion. It is generally understood to be the source of much of our rain, and 10,000 fleets are said to have swept over it in vain. When the poet requested it to break on its cold gray rocks, it obligingly broke. Which, as the poet was Alfred Lord Tennyson, didn't surprise him at all, but if it had been me, I would probably have had a stroke. Some people call it the Atlantic, and some the Pacific, or the Antarctic, or the Indian, or the Mediterranean Sea. But I always say, what difference does it make, some old geographer mumbling a few words over it? It will always be just the ocean to me. There is an immortal dignity about something like the Atlantic, which seems to drive unimmortal, undignified human beings frustratedly frantic. Just give them one foot on the beach, and people who were perfectly normal formerly, or whilom, why, they're subject to whoops and capers that would get them blackballed from an asylum. Yet, be they never so rampant and hollerant, the ocean is tolerant. Except a couple of times a day it gives up in disgust and goes off by itself and hides. And that, my dears, accounts for the tides.
Mr. Nash has a typical American husband's viewpoint on such subjects as, well, how many times have you stood in the hall, dressed to the teeth, and waited for your wife to finish her primping? Ogden Nash has these thoughts on that situation. The poem is called The Evening Out.
You have your hat and coat on, and she says she will be right down. And you hope so, because it is getting late, and you're dining on the other side of town. And you are pretty sure she can't take long, because when you left her, she already looked as neat and snappy as a cold porter song. So you stand around thinking of various things and wondering why good rye costs more than scotch. And after a while, you begin to look at your watch. And so goes 10 minutes and then 15 minutes and then half an hour. And you listen for the sound of water running because you suspect she may have gone back for a bath or a shower. Or maybe she decided her hair was a mess and is now shampooing it. But whatever she is up to, she is a long time doing it. And finally, she comes down and says she is sorry she couldn't find the right lipstick. That's why she was so slow. And you look at her, and she looks marvelous, but not a bit more marvelous than she did when you left her 45 minutes ago. And you tell her she looks ravishing, and she says, no, she's a sight. And you reflect that you are now an hour late, but at any rate, she is now groomed for the rest of the night. So you get to your destination, and there's the lady's dressing room, and before you know it, she's in it. But she says she'll be back in a minute, and so she is, but not to tarry. No, only to ask you for her bag, which she has forgotten she had asked you to carry. So you linger in the lobby and wish you had a nice, portable hobby. And you try to pass the time seeing how much you can remember of the poetry you learned in school, both good verse and bad verse. And eventually she reappears, just about as you have decided she was in the middle of Anthony Adverse. And she doesn't apologize, but glances at you as if you were Bluebeard or Scrooge, and says, why didn't you tell her she had on too much rouge? And you look to see what new tint she has acquired, and she looks just the same as she did before she retired. So you dine and reach the theater in time for the third act, and then go somewhere to dance and sup. And she says she looks like a scarecrow. She has to go straighten up. So then you don't see her for quite a long time. But at last you see her for a moment when she comes out to ask if you will lend her a dime. The moral of all which is that you will have just as much of her company and still save considerable on cover charges and beverages and grub if instead of taking her out on the town, you settle her in a nice, comfortable dressing room and then go off and spend the evening at the club.
Returning for a moment to notes gleaned from 20th century authors, we read that Louis Untermyer, in writing about Ogden Nash in the New York Journal, qualified his praise of the poet's work with the reservation that productiveness not only compels Nash to pad, but to pretend. He has to pretend to be funnier than he really is, or to be funny when he wants to be serious. But he writes, often the best light verse written in America today. On the Cadman label, let's listen again to Ogden Nash. This time we'll hear him read, What to Do Until the Doctor Goes, or It's Tomorrow Than You Think. The Peltergeist, My Peltergeist, and Piano Tuner, Untune Me That Tune.
Oh, hand me down my old cigar with its Havana wrapper and its filling of cubeb. Fill the little brown jug with bismuth and paregoric and the pottle and cannikin with soda and rhubarb. Lend me a 99-piece orchestra tutored by Koussevitzky. I don't want the ownership of it. I just want the use of it, Ski. Bring me a firkin of Arkansas orators to sing me oratorios. Remove these calf-clad Spanglers and Prousts and replace them with paper-covered Wodehouses and Gaborios. Wrap up and return these secretarial prunes and prisms. Let me have about me bosoms without isms. Life and I are not convivial. Life is real, life is earnest, while I only think I am real and know I am trivial. In this imponderable world, I lose no opportunity to ponder on picayunity. I would spend either a round amount or a flat amount to know whether a puma is only tantamount to a catamount or paramount to a catamount. It is honey in my cup when I read of a sprinter sprinting the 100 yards in 10 seconds flat to think, golly, suppose he stood up. I guess I'm not really reprehensible, just dispensable. I've put Miss Hopper upon the train, and I hope to do so never again. For must I do so, I shouldn't wonder if instead of upon it, I put her under. Never has host encountered a visitor less desirabler, less exquisiter, or experienced such a tangy zest in beholding the back of a parting guest. Hoitiful, toitiful Hecate Hopper haunted our house and haunted it proper. Hecate Hopper left the property irredeemably Hecate Hopperty. The morning paper was her monopoly. She read it first, and Hecate Hopperly, handing on to the old subscriber a wad of Dorothy Dix and fiber. Shall we coin a phrase for to uncooperate? How about trying to Hecate Hopperate? On the maid's days off, she found it fun to breakfast in bed at 12:45. Not only was Hecate on a diet, she insisted that all the family try it. And all one weekend, we gobbled like pigs on rutabagas and salted figs. She clogged the pipes and she blew the fuses. She broke the rocker that Grandma uses. And she ran amok in the medicine chest, Hecate Hopper, the poltergeist. If I pushed Miss Hopper under the train, I'd probably have to do it again. For the time that I pushed her off the boat, I regretfully found Miss Hopper could float. I regret that before people can be reformed, they have to be sinners. And that before you have pianists in the family, you have to have beginners. When it comes to beginners' music, I am not enthusiastic. And when listening to something called An Evening in My Dollhouse, or Buzz Buzz, Said the Beat of the Clover, why, I'd like just once to hear it played all the way through instead of that hard part near the end over and over. Have you noticed about little fingers? When they hit a sour note, they lingers. And another thing about little fingers, they're always strawberry jammed or cranberry jellied, and chopsticks is their favorite melody. And if there is one man who I hope his dentist was a sadist and all his teeth were brittle ones, it is he who invented chopsticks for the little ones. My good wishes are less than frugal for him who started the little ones going boogie-woogle. But for him who started the little ones picking out chopsticks on the ivories, well, I wish him 1,000 harems of 1,000 wives apiece and 1,000 little ones by each wife and each little one playing chopsticks 24 hours a day in all the nurseries of all his harems or wiveries.
In just a moment, the voice and the verse of Carl Sandburg. On Sunday and Monday evenings following the final musical programs, WNBC has been signing off with a special message from Ben Grauer. Since we've become associated with poetry through the medium of anthology, it's been suggested that we find a new poem for that early morning ritual of putting WNBC to bed. Here are three possibilities. See how they strike your fancy. These are lines from Shelley's Hymn of Apollo. The sleepless hours who watch me as I lie, curtained with star-inwoven tapestries from the broad moonlight of the sky, fanning the busy dreams from my dim eyes, waken me when their mother, the gray dawn, tells them that dreams and the moon are gone. This poem by Amelia C. Welby. The twilight hours like birds flew by as lightly and as free. 10,000 stars were in the sky, 10,000 on the sea. For every wave with dimpled face that leaped upon the air had caught a star in its embrace and held it trembling there. Zoe Aiken's beautiful poem, This Is My Hour, contains these verses, which have much of the tranquil quality for which we're searching. This is my hour between the day and night. The sun has set and all the world is still. The afterglow upon the distant hill is as a holy light. This is my hour between the sun and moon. The little stars are gathering in the sky. There is no sound, but one bird's startled cry, one note that ceases soon. The gardens and far off the meadowland are like the fading depths beneath the sea, while over waves of misty shadows we drift onward, hand in hand. This is my hour that you have called your own. Its hushed beauty silently we share, touched by the wistful wonder in the air that leaves us so alone. We'll explore a few more possibilities next Sunday afternoon. Meanwhile, if you have a poem in the back of your mind which you think might sound nice in the dark, early hours of the morning, we'd appreciate your suggestions very much.
Oh, Shenandoah, I long to hear you. Across that wide and rolling river, ah, I'm bound away across the wide Missouri.
As simple, as beautiful, and as moving as our American folk music are the poems of Carl Sandburg. Now, 76 years old, Sandburg is considered by many to be the leading spokesman of our people. Whether he writes as a folklorist or tells downcountry stories or lets his rich Illinois baritone roll out with the freedom of a wind blowing over the cornfields, Sandburg is a natural lover of life. A life that ranges from cities of stone and steel to the vast silence of the western deserts. Although he's now a distinguished man of letters, Sandburg has never lost the common touch. Whether they're written, spoken, or sung, his words are always alive because they are the living words of the common man. And now, Sandburg reads Sandburg.
The strong men keep coming on. They go down, shot, hanged, sick, broken. They live on fighting, singing, lucky as plungers. The strong mothers pulling them on. The strong mothers pulling them from a dark sea, a great prairie, a long mountain. Call hallelujah. Call amen. Call deep thanks. The strong men keep coming on. The sea wash never ends. The sea wash repeats, repeats. Only old songs, is that all the sea knows? Only the old strong songs. Is that all? The sea wash repeats, repeats. Bilbea, I was in Babylon on Saturday night. I saw nothing of you anywhere. I was at the old place, and the other girls were there. But no Bilbea. Have you gone to another house or city? Why don't you write? I was sorry. I walked home half sick. Tell me how it goes. Send me some kind of a letter. And take care of yourself. A father sees a son nearing manhood. What shall he tell that son? Life is hard. Be steel. Be a rock. And this might stand him for the storms, and serve him for humdrum and monotony, and guide him amid sudden betrayals, and tighten him for slack moments. Life is a soft loam. Be gentle. Go easy. And this, too, might serve him. Brutes have been gentle where lashes failed. The growth of a frail flower in a path up has sometimes shattered and split a rock. A tough will counts. So does desire. So does a rich, soft wanting. Without rich wanting, nothing arrives. Tell him too much money has killed men and left them dead years before burial. The quest of lucre beyond a few easy needs has twisted good enough men sometimes into dry, thwarted worms. Tell him time as a stuff can be wasted. Tell him to be a fool every so often, and to have no shame over having been a fool, yet learning something out of every folly, hoping to repeat none of the cheap follies, thus arriving at intimate understanding of a world numbering many fools. Tell him to be alone often, and get at himself, and above all, tell himself no lies about himself, whatever the white lies and protective fronts he may use amongst other people. Tell him solitude is creative if he is strong, and the final decisions are made in silent rooms. Tell him to be different from other people if it comes natural and easy being different. Let him have lazy days seeking his deeper motives. Let him seek deep for where he is a born natural. Then he may understand Shakespeare and the Wright brothers, Pasteur, Pavlov, Michael Faraday, and free imaginations bringing changes into a world resenting change. He will be lonely enough to have time for the work he knows as his own. Bees and a honeycomb in the dried head of a horse in a pasture corner. A skull in the tall grass. And a buzz of the yellow honey hunters. And I ask no better a winding sheet over the earth and under the sun. Let the bees go honey hunting with yellow blur of wings in the dome of my head, in the rumbling, singing arch of my skull. Let there be wings and yellow dust and the drone of dreams of honey. Who loses and remembers, who keeps and forgets. In a blue sheen of moon, over the bones and under the hanging honeycomb, the bees come home and the bees sleep. When Abraham Lincoln was shoveled into the tombs, he forgot the copperheads and the assassin. In the dust, in the cool tombs. And Ulysses Grant lost all thought of con men and Wall Street. Cash and collateral turned ashes. In the dust, in the cool tombs. Pocahontas' body, lovely as a poplar, sweet as a red haw in November or a pawpaw in May. Did she wonder, does she remember, in the dust, in the cool tombs? Take any street full of people buying clothes and groceries, cheering a hero or throwing confetti and blowing tin horns. Tell me if the lovers are losers. Tell me if any get more than the lovers. In the dust, in the cool tombs.
The wide Missouri.
So, Anthology, number 21, dated Sunday, August 1st, 1954. Next week, have your French dictionary handy because we'll be listening to some modern French poetry. We'll also hear two poems from Puerto Rico, read for you by a young Puerto Rican student currently enrolled at New York University. And don't forget to send in your suggestions for a WNBC bedtime verse. We can't offer you a solid gold Cadillac for your efforts, but we'd be most appreciative of your help. Anthology comes to you with the cooperation of the YM and YWHA Poetry Center, 92nd Street and Lexington Avenue in Manhattan. John Malcolm Brennan, director. The program is produced by Steve White, written and directed for WNBC by Draper Lewis. Until next Sunday, then, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good reading.